Thanks. To start with, I'll give a brief summary of the asset risk charge. The asset risk charge is made up of a series of modules. Each module applies a different stress scenario to the capital base, as shown on this slide. The capital charges for the modules are combined using a correlation matrix, which recognises the likelihood of different risks occurring at the same time. The asset risk charge is essentially the same for both life insurers and general insurers, but the existing standards for asset risk are very different. There are also significant differences in the nature of life insurance and general insurance liabilities. This meant that we got quite different responses to our proposals from the two industries. The overall structure was fairly well received by the life industry, but many of the submissions from the general insurance industry were concerned about the increasing complexity compared to their existing standards. The general insurers were concerned that the asset risk charge would be difficult to calculate, that it would require the involvement of actuaries, and it would also be difficult for them to explain the results to management and to boards. APRA has decided to retain the overall structure of the charge, as we consider that a reasonable level of complexity is necessary in order to achieve an appropriate level of risk sensitivity. We have not accepted the too hard to explain argument. As Helen mentioned in the earlier session, APRA believes it is important for management and boards to understand asset risks and the potential correlations between them, as management of these risks is an integral part of running a life insurance or general insurance business. One of the more controversial issues for the life industry was the inclusion of all admissible assets in the calculation of the asset risk charge. This is a change from the existing life standards, where the resilience reserve does not consider the impact of asset stresses on surplus assets. We recognise that the inclusion of surplus assets in the asset risk charge is not strictly in line with the 99.5% level of sufficiency that we are targeting. However, there are strong reasons for why we have retained this proposal. The main reason is that it applies a risk adjustment to surplus assets, which reflects the way they are invested. Surplus under these proposals is effectively the capital that the insurer would be left with after a 1 in 200 shock. APRA believes this method of determining surplus and the PCR gives a more useful measure of the financial strength of an insurer than the alternative of not risk adjusting the surplus. There were also some other reasons for including surplus assets in the charge. These include consistency with the existing ADI and general insurance standards, and it also makes the calculations a little bit simpler. Including surplus assets in the asset risk charge makes the prudential capital requirement higher than it would otherwise be. However, we expect insurers will be able to offset this increase to some extent through being able to hold lower target surplus. This is because the impact of asset shocks on surplus is already allowed for within the PCR. So now we come to the things that APRA has changed as part of its response to industry. The changes to the real interest rates and expected inflation modules were mainly aimed at simplifying the calculations and removing some of the pro-cyclical effects in the original proposals. Removing the duration-dependent factors has simplified the calculations, and it has also had the effect of reducing the capital charges for shorter duration assets and liabilities. Another simplification was removal of the requirement to split nominal interest rates into real and inflation components. This was an issue of particular concern for the general insurance industry, as they don't normally use an explicit CPI inflation assumption in their liability valuations. In the revised proposals, the real interest rate stress is applied to nominal yields, and the expected inflation stress is a fixed basis point movement that can be applied to nominal yields and to any explicit inflation assumption. To reduce the pro-cyclical effects of upward rate movements, we have limited the real interest rate movements to a maximum of 200 basis points. and the expected inflation stresses have been specified as an addition to prevailing inflation rather than by using a multiplicative method. Quiz 1 showed that volatility was a relatively minor risk for most insurers, and it was a small part of the overall asset risk charge across industry. One of our simplifications is to remove the volatility module and instead include an equity volatility stress within the equity module. Combining the equity and volatility stresses is also likely to give a better capital charge, which reflects the non-linear features of derivatives and the interrelationships between movements in equity markets and volatility. We removed the downward equity volatility stress because reductions in volatility usually occur when equity values are rising, so it would be unusual for downward volatility to be a material risk. The pro-cyclicality of the equity volatility stress has been addressed by changing it from a multiplicative basis to an additive basis of plus 15%. We did have some submissions asking for volatility to be made duration dependent, as spikes in volatility are almost always short-lived. We did have some sympathy with these comments, but we preferred to keep the structure of the stress simple. And given all the other changes that we made, including duration dependency, may not have made much difference to the capital charges. The interest and currency volatility stresses have been removed, but as with all risks that are not explicitly addressed in the capital standards, we expect these risks to be considered in the ICAP and FCR if they are material. Submissions on the credit spreads proposals commented on the large increases in capital required relative to the existing standards. The proposals were felt to be particularly harsh for higher quality structured assets, such as mortgage-backed securities, and for longer duration, lower quality assets. To address these issues, we have split the structured category into two parts, with higher charges applying to re-securitised assets, such as CDOs. We have also introduced separate default and spread stresses, which are similar to the existing life standards. Even with these changes, many assets will be subject to much higher stresses than in the existing standards. This in large part reflects the outcomes we saw during the GFC in both Australia and overseas. We received some comments that said it was inappropriate for lower quality, longer duration fixed interest assets to have a greater capital charge than an equity asset. Our response to this is that the equity stress is applied on a portfolio basis, whereas the credit spread stress is applied to individual assets. We think it would be very unusual for a portfolio of fixed interest assets to have a capital charge bigger than that for equities. In our original proposals, semi-government debt was treated in the same way as corporate debt. We have revised this proposal and now recognise semi-government debt as a separate category by rating it up one counterparty grade. This means that AAA-rated semis will have a zero credit spreads capital charge. One issue that we have not addressed yet is interactions between credit spreads and the liquidity premium. In theory, a credit spread stress may represent an increased allowance for both credit and liquidity risk. An increase in liquidity risk could be reflected in a higher discount rate for illiquid liabilities. This is an issue that we'll need to consider as part of the development work we're doing on the liquidity premium. The default module has been simplified by applying the default factors to unstressed reinsurance assets and OTC derivatives. This is a significant simplification of the proposals, as it means that stressed reinsurance assets determined using a gross insurance risk charge will only need to be calculated if the asset concentration limits are at risk of being breached. It will also typically result in a small reduction in the capital charge for the default module. One of the problems with the modular framework that APRA is using is that it can be difficult to allow for interrelationships between different types of risk. And the relationship between insurance risk and reinsurer default risk was one of these areas. As part of APRA's response, we have increased some of the factors in the correlation matrix in order to improve its internal consistency. And I would note here that, as with all of the parameters we have set, it was necessary to apply a considerable amount of judgment in addition to our analysis of historical experience in Australia and overseas. Some other issues. One is the aggregation benefit, which is the combination of insurance risk and asset risk. The aggregation benefit recognises that asset and insurance risks are not highly correlated. For Quiz 2, we have reduced the correlation factor from 50% to 30%, and we will be reviewing the correlation factor again following Quiz 2. We believe a low to moderate level of correlation between an asset and insurance risks is appropriate. There is little hard evidence to support this assumption, but for life insurance, we think it is probable that extreme events such as a global pandemic would have some adverse impact on asset markets. And there is also a possible linkage between severe economic downturns and increases in disability claims. We have maintained our approach of leaving operational risk out of the aggregation benefit. The rationale for this is that in times of extreme stress, operational risk increases. Asset concentration has also been left out of the aggregation benefit due to the nature of this charge. Unlike the other capital charges, the asset concentration risk charge is not intended to be a risk-sensitive charge. Rather, it is designed to strongly discourage insurers from holding concentrated exposures to single assets and counterparties. The capital framework raises some complex methodology issues in respect of tax and participating business. This complexity arises because of the way each of the capital charges is determined for separate individual risks, and the capital charges are then aggregated with an explicit allowance for correlations. Allowance for tax and management actions, such as reductions to bonus rates, are made when determining each risk charge, but when all the risk charges are aggregated, tests must be applied in order to determine whether the tax assets in aggregate are realisable and whether the combination of management actions could be implemented in practice. For participating business, we came to the conclusion that it is not appropriate for APRA to specify a single method for achieving this outcome, as any one method is unlikely to give the right answer in all situations. Instead, we are leaving it to actuaries to determine the most suitable solution for each statutory fund. For tax, most insurers in their submissions said that they preferred to recognise the tax assets arising within each of the risk modules and then test at the aggregation stage whether these tax assets would be realisable. The easiest way of applying this test is to use a single scenario that incorporates all of the asset and insurance stresses, together with an allowance for the correlations between them. If a single scenario is used for determining the admissible tax assets, the same scenario could also be used for testing the limits to management actions for participating business. As part of our response, we have also issued some proposals for the general fund, which means the management fund for friendly societies and the shareholders fund for other life companies. These proposals largely replicate the proposals for statutory funds. But a special feature of the general fund capital requirements is the $10 million minimum, which we have carried over from the existing standards. We propose to allow part of this $10 million to be counted towards the capital requirements of statutory funds if it is not required to cover the capital charges for the general fund. And that concludes our presentation of APRA's proposals. So I'll now throw the session open for questions.